This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insights and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 14th of October, 2016. My name's Jamie Veitch. You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme. We're broadcasting live on 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. This show will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. And in today's programme, we're talking with Tina Carr of Brocco on the Park, the boutique Sheffield hotel and restaurant, which has just been named City Hotel of the Year by The Good Hotel Guide, the UK's wholly independent guide to the UK's best hotels. We're also talking with Steve Buckley about Social Enterprise Exchange, which is a new initiative to support social enterprises across the Sheffield region. And we're talking with Dave Cockloff of Dialogue, talking about a fantastic award win, accolade from peers, and much, much more. But before we turn to our guests, if you missed last week's programme, which featured crowdfunding tips for business mentors with Barry James, and Sheffield's Alternative Information Centre out CNI with Nicole Jewett, well, of course, you can catch the podcast on the Sheffield Live website. Just go to sheffieldlive.org, find radio shows, look up Business Live, and it will be there. Before we turn to today's guests, a quick roundup of what's going on in business and in social enterprise in the region. Yorkshire has won the bid to host the 2019 UCI Road World Cycling Championships, which is returning to Britain for the first time in 37 years. A joint bid was put forward by Welcome to Yorkshire, British Cycling, UK Sport and the Department for Culture, Media and Sport. And as part of the successful bid, £24 million of government investment will be injected into the sporting event, as well as £3 million of lottery funding from UK Sport. Britain last hosted the championships in Goodwood in 1982. Reducing the gender pay gap would add £150 billion to the UK economy by 2025, according to a new report which was published this week. It also found that nearly 80% of women say business and employers should bridge the gap in pay. And the gap stands, according to the report, at 19.2%. It will be with us for a lifetime and causes significant damage to the UK productivity levels unless government and employees can take action. The Equality and Women's Rights Charity, the Fawcett Society, published the report, which also revealed that 77% of women and 66% of men believe it's the responsibility of businesses and employers to reduce the gender pay gap. 68% of women and 56% of men said solving the issue was the government's responsibility. The shortlist for the Sheffield Business Awards has been published this week. It's online at the Sheffield Business Awards website, and it was the highest number of applications ever, according to organisers, this year. So 16 categories, shortlist revealed, and the actual final winners are going to be announced at an event on the 1st of December. So take a look at Sheffield Business Awards to find out more, to learn who has been shortlisted. Sheffield-headquartered law firm Irwin Mitchell have published their UK Powerhouse report. They say that the economic gap between Yorkshire and London is set to widen by £50 billion over the next 10 years. Their report was produced with the Centre for Economic and Business Research. It provides an estimate of gross value added and job creation within 38 of the UK's largest cities. comes out 12 months ahead of government official figures, and its latest report shows that Yorkshire's largest cities did experience significant growth in output during the second quarter of 2016. Sheffield's economy grew by 1.8% in the 12 months to quarter two of 2016. However, the report does predict that city economies in Yorkshire will continue to be outpaced by others in the South East. Changes to the national minimum wage rates came into effect on the 1st of October. The rate, the national minimum wage for workers aged 21 to 24 increased from £6.70 to £6.95. For 18 to 22-year-olds, it increased from £5.30 to £5.55. And for those aged 16 and 17, it increased from £3.87 to £4. And a national minimum wage for apprentices increased from £3.30 to £3.40. The national living wage rate for workers aged 25 and over is unchanged at £7.20, and the new rates will apply until the 30th of March 2017. From the 1st of April 2017, the national minimum wage and the national living wage rates are going to be aligned, and the revised rates will then come into effect on the 1st of April every year. More information at the government website gov.uk/national-minimum-wage-rates. Dialogue Group have been crowned the Gold Medal Award winner at Insiders Annual Growth 100 Awards, held this week at the Thorpe Park Hotel and Spa in Leeds. The ceremony honoured businesses from across the region which are achieving sustained rapid growth. And Adam Lavelle, Yorkshire Business Insider editor, praised all the companies which have made the prestigious list this year and revealed that combined they've added a collective revenue increase of £3.8 billion to Yorkshire. And we'll be talking with Dave from Dialogue Group just shortly in a few minutes. Sheffield Soup, real-time community crowdfunding in Sheffield, are looking for applications from businesses and social enterprises to pitch at their next event on the 26th of October. The rules are simple. You need to live in Sheffield, or your business or project must benefit a Sheffield business, organisation or community. It's really simple to apply. All you need to do is apply before 1 o'clock on Saturday, this Saturday, the 15th of October. Now, if you want to learn how to do that, just look up Chef Soup on Twitter. You don't have to be a Twitter user yourself, but just go onto the Twitter website, find Chef Soup, and then follow the link to the application. It's a simple application, and there should be a few hundred pounds up for grabs. Young entrepreneurs in Rotherham have been urged to submit award entries for the Young Entrepreneur of the Year Awards, which celebrate their 11th year this year. Rotherham Youth Enterprise provides support and help to young business owners. They run the Rotherham Young Entrepreneur of the Year Awards in association with UK Steel Enterprise. They cover all sectors and they aim to celebrate and promote the best businesses run by 18 to 30 year olds in Rotherham that have been up and running for at least 6 months. There are categories from best new startup, business most determined to succeed, best established business, most innovative business and best customer service. One winner will also be crowned Young Entrepreneur of the Year. Winners get a £500 boost to further their business, plus there's an additional cash prize of £1,000 awarded to the overall winner. And entries close on the 17th of October. Entry forms from Rotherham Youth Enterprise at rotherham.gov.uk/RYE, or check their Facebook page for more details. Coming soon on Monday, it's the Sheffield Business Conference of Autumn, 9 o'clock, Monday the 17th, at the Royal Inn, at the Holiday Inn, Royal Victoria Hotel in Sheffield. Brings together leaders of the region's most important business projects set to transform the economy of the city region, according to organisers. And key topics include the retail quarter, Chinese investment in Sheffield, leisure and tourism, transforming Attercliffe, and more. And that half-day conference is being run in association with the ChefX event. So check the ChefX website for more details. Also coming up, it's the MADE Festival of Entrepreneurship. Details continue to be unveiled in terms of speakers. Check out the MADE Festival website for more. And this week, it's the Social Enterprise Exchange Launch Conference, a new initiative providing a programme of support to social enterprises across the Sheffield City region to promote social entrepreneurship and contribute towards job creation and growth and social inclusion. They have a half-day launch event on the 20th of October. We'll be learning more about that later in the programme, talking with Steve Buckley. Finally, Social Saturday this weekend, the 15th of October, all about encouraging people to buy from businesses that put people and planet first. It's a fun day out. You can see how your spending power can make a difference. More details at socialsaturday.org.uk. So, you can get in touch with this programme if you're running a business or a social enterprise. If you think there's something we should cover, if you want to put yourself forward to be a guest on the programme, then just email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, text 07904 272 200. Find me on Twitter, Jamie Veitch. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. Time now to turn to our first guest of the morning. And in the studio with me, I'm delighted to welcome Dave Cockloff of Dialogue. Dave, good morning.
Good morning.
So Dave, as Operations Director of Dialogue, you must have been very, very happy, delighted this week. We mentioned at the top of the show, Dialogue Group was crowned a gold medal award winner as Insiders Annual Growth 100 Award. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And thank you for the invite. It's great to be here today. So absolutely superb. We were blown away by the accolade. It's really testament to the hard work of the staff over the past number of years. A fantastic result.
Brilliant result, it really is. And as we heard at the top of the show, the collective revenue increase to Yorkshire is 3.88 billion from all the companies that made the list this year. It is a prestigious list, the Growth 100 Awards. You went along to the ceremony. That must have been fun.
Great fun, yes, yeah. Three course meals, Monday lunchtime, so...
And what was it, do you think, then, about the success and achievements of Dialogue Group that got the judges' attention? Why did they give you the award?
I think Dialogue was first formed back in 1994 here in Sheffield. So we've been going for over 21 years. It's formed by two friends, Hugh Spear and Paul Griffiths. And really our roots are bedded here in Sheffield. And what we've managed to achieve over the past 21 years is an expansion into to other territories on a global basis.
Yes.
And I think that they really recognise that. There's a lot of longevity within the business, a lot of expertise, but we're still grounded in Yorkshire, and that really appealed to the judges.
So that Yorkshire base, but global operations and genuine innovation and expertise.
Exactly, yeah.
And you talked about how since being founded, the business has expanded to other territories and truly global, of course, there as well. Where are you operating now?
So we've got a main base in Sheffield, and that's really the technical base, the finance base of the organisation. We've got an office down on Regent Street in London and an office in Singapore and Sydney, Australia as well.
And how much of your business as a proportion is overseas? How much is UK?
So around about 40% is overseas business for us. And we're seeing significant growth, certainly in Southeast Asia and the Australia markets, where we are quite dominant.
So that's great news then. And the business itself, let's perhaps tell listeners a little bit more about what you do. In fact, I should ask you to tell listeners what you do.
So in its most simple form, we're a wholesale SMS provider.
Yeah.
So examples that I think listeners are probably most accustomed to, you perhaps get a text message from your bank or from an appointment reminder from your doctors, or perhaps to say a delivery is on its way. There's also engagement with websites. So in terms of two-factor authentication, you perhaps put your phone number in, they'll send you a PIN, you re-enter into the website just to prove you are who you say you are. That type of text messaging is referred to as application-to-person text messaging, and we're very, very key to that process. So on one side, we have businesses, organisations which are our customers, and on the other side, we have mobile network operators on a global basis, and we act as a kind of switchboard, if you will. That message will come from that business through Dialog's platform services and then get distributed to the relevant mobile network.
Right, yes, absolutely. So the mobile subscriber, the consumer, the user, they interact with the business that uses your services.
That's correct, yeah.
And so Southeast Asia is a growth market for you?
Yeah, so what we've started to do over the past few years is really focus in on where we sit within that value chain and position ourselves a lot closer to the mobile network operators. We're looking at ways that we can help those to secure that channel revenue, monetization. Yes. What we've seen in the marketplace since we started, now bearing in mind that the first text message was sent in 1992 and that Dialog was formed in 1994. So we've been on this journey alongside text, you know, right the way through.
Yes, indeed.
And what we've seen over the past few years is that person-to-person text messaging, so you're messaging your friends and your family, actually there's competitors in that space now,
of course,
with WhatsApp and Google and Skype. So the mobile network operators themselves are seeing a decline in revenue, but all the research is showing us that on the application to person text messaging, where you're interacting with some sort of service, that there's still growth over the next 5 years. So what we're doing is positioning ourselves a lot closer, partnering with the mobile network operators to make sure that they're really secure, they understand that the value in that, securing it and seeing the monetization come through.
So you're helping the mobile network operators to adapt, to evolve as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Great. And you mentioned that the accolade, the award in terms of being gold medal winner at the Growth 100 Awards, that's great for the business. It's great for your team. And you talked about the hardworking team there. Is Yorkshire a great place to recruit the kind of technical expertise that you need in your team? And how are we doing as a region? We've talked a lot about creative and digital industries and the value they add on this programme. How do you find it?
Yeah, no, it's a really good region. I think there's a lot of good entrepreneurial type spirit here. In terms of technical resource, I mean, there's plenty of digital type agencies here.
Yes.
And of course, we've got the universities as well, and we get candidates coming from that channel as well. So I think in terms of an area to really grow those skills and adapt them, then fantastic. And it's really helped us as an organisation.
Superb. Excellent. So what's next then? Where will we see you in 6 months or 12 months? What awards will be on the mantelpiece?
Well, this is just the start now. So now that we've got a taste for it. But certainly in the near term, so we're pursuing the strategy of overseas. So we've seen a lot of growth in Southeast Asia. One of the things that we have been able to achieve is really see this growth with quite a small team. So we've only got 45 members of staff globally. Mm. So actually to position ourselves very highly in this list with such a small number of staff, again, goes back to the testament, the hard work of the staff themselves.
Yes.
So I think moving forward, we'd can continue on that journey. And what we need to be doing is looking at other territories where we can be adding value, really. So
Great. So looking towards other territories, moving forward in that way. Now, I suppose if there are businesses listening and they think, well, we'd love to interact with our customers through SMS.
Mm-hmm.
Any advice for a business that thinks, we need to provide this kind of facility? What do we do about it? How do we first investigate this?
Yeah, so I mean, again, come along to the Dialog website, dialog.net. There's information available there. We've certainly got our own sales team that can help talk around that. One of the benefits that we've seen, and why we still see growth in the A2P SMS space, is the fact that it's ubiquitous. So organisations, unless you've got an app and you can guarantee that your entire subscriber base is on that app, actually text message is a fantastic channel to reach your target market. And the stats show that if you receive a text message within 90 seconds, you know, the majority of those are read. So it's that level of confidence that you're getting your message there. It's a fantastic communication channel. You don't necessarily need to be on a data connection, which you perhaps do with some of the other services.
So food for thought there for businesses who might be looking at what they consider to be essential as an app. Actually, SMS is a really responsive, you know, it'd be read.
Yeah.
And so if you're considering that, Dialogue obviously could help with that. But what do people sort of need to think about before they even approach a provider like you in terms of how they want to interact with people?
Yeah, so I mean, again, it's just understanding your target market, really. I think, as I say, text message is ubiquitous. It is all over the place anyway. So I think in terms of the way that you want to communicate, you need to be looking at perhaps your systems. So, for instance, for the Dialogue platform, we offer something called APIs, application program interfaces, how you would link your system into that. Because what you don't really want to be doing, certainly if you've got quite a large customer base, is sitting there typing out every single text message. So
it may
take a while. So again, we've got solutions that can help with that, but that's the type of thing that you really need to be considering. Have you got the technical expertise in-house to sort of integrate with someone like a Dialogue to send those large volumes of text?
That makes sense. That's well worth thinking about. So great stuff. So onwards and upwards then for Dialogue Group. Mm. And we'll have to have you back in a few months' time when there are even more accolades, as I say, on the mantelpiece at Dialogue Towers.
Yeah.
As a global director of operations in a business which gold medal award winner for growth and obviously doing great things. Any tips for people running businesses? Anything that you know now from your career that you wish you'd known earlier on in your career?
Yeah, I think we were going for 21 years, and what we did around about 5 years ago was sort of stop, pause, and say, well, actually, we've got a small team of people. But actually, we're trying to spread ourselves too thin. We've got too many product lines on the go at the same time. So that was an opportunity, really, just to sit down as a senior management team, focus in on where our core strengths are.
Yes.
And you can't really put a value on just having a team of people that are completely focused, aligned in terms of objectives, enthused, passionate about what they do. And that's the journey, certainly over the past 5 years that we've been on, which has allowed us to see this success. It's just complete alignment across the organization, an investment in systems that allow that information to be shared between perhaps the sales department, the support department, the technical department, and then really just kind of building that buzz within the organization that you know you're all on a journey together and really just getting behind it. So I think had we have tackled that probably slightly earlier, we'd have been a lot more successful than we are today. But we are still on a journey. We tackled it, and
superb. Well, congratulations, Dave, and congratulations to you and the team at Dialogue. Fantastic news. And you can give out the website address once more if people want to find out more about you.
www.dialogue.net.
Superb. Dave Colcloft, Global Director of Operations at Dialogue, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dave Colcloft of Dialogue Group, crowned the Gold Medal Award winner at the annual Growth 100 Awards this week. This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. Business Live is our weekly programme about business and social enterprise. Now, earlier on this week, a boutique hotel in Sheffield, Brocco-on-the-Park, was named City Hotel of the Year by the Good Hotel Guide, which is the UK's wholly independent guide to the UK's best hotels. Brocco-on-the-Park was only launched a couple of years ago. I went along yesterday to meet Tina Carr, its owner, find out more about what this award means and about the process of converting an old building into a hotel, launching a boutique hotel, winning customers and winning accolades like this. And we'll hear from Tina now.
So good afternoon, Tina, and thanks very much for joining me today. And a big smile on your face because a fantastic accolade, really great news to learn that Brockenhurst Park has been named City Hotel of the Year by the Good Hotel Guide, one of the CESAR Awards. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You must be over the moon.
I'm thrilled, yes. I was completely shocked because it was something completely out of the blue. Didn't even know we entered into an award, never mind to win something. So it was fabulous news and very exciting for us. Brilliant. And for Sheffield.
Yeah, brilliant news for you. Brilliant news for Sheffield as well, because you're the only hotel, not only in Sheffield, but in Yorkshire, I understand, to have been given.
I think we're the only ones getting an award. Yeah. There are other hotels in the guide, obviously the Good Hotel Guide of Yorkshire. But I don't think there's any Sheffield hotel in the Good Hotel Guide. So that's interesting.
It certainly is. And as you said, you didn't know that the accolade was coming, which demonstrates the rigour, I think, of the accolades as well. They're well respected by the hospitality industry, and the guide itself is trusted by its readers. Tell us a little bit more about the CESAR Awards and about the guide.
Well, the CESAR Awards are back in the day of CESAR Ritz, so it was the Ritz Awards that started this, and they tell me that it's like the Oscars of the hotel industry. So it's totally anonymous. We had a couple, they always send a couple assessors, so you aren't sort of looking out for any single travellers that are asking you funny questions.
Indeed.
So you don't know that people have been, they stayed in one of our rooms called Chiff Chaff Post, and they, from when I read the guide, I can see that's where they stayed. And they obviously have dinner and evening meal and probably ask a few questions. But so it's totally anonymous. We don't have to, we don't pay to be in the guide.
No.
We don't obviously give them any free dinners or night stay or anything like that, which other guides, that's what happens. So this is why it's such an amazing award, really, because you don't know that you've been entered for it. You don't even know you've been assessed to go in the guide. Because obviously last year we weren't in the guide. They didn't even know about us.
No.
So not only have we got in the guide, which is obviously a big tick in its own right, we then won one of their 10 awards. So I was really, really happy. And to be the City Hotel of the Year, there are a lot of cities in the UK, so it feels like there was a massive competition, and that's really nice.
It's absolutely brilliant for you, for the business, and as you say, for Sheffield as well.
Yeah.
And the hotel, of course, is only young. You opened in 2014.
Yeah, it's just nearly 2 years, so we've done, seem to have won a few things. So we won Alistair Sorday's guide last year, Best Newcomer of 2016, and we also had a couple of reviews from Fiona Duncan, who's the Sunday Telegraph travel writer. And though we knew she was coming, she then did a review in the Sunday Telegraph, but at Christmas she did her top 10 highlights of the year. And she gave Brock on the Park her top 10 highlight and said we were the best hotel, top for design. And that was a fantastic Christmas present last year and a real boost to everybody, because for her to have gone around all the hotels she does see every year and then put us as one of her top 10 of the year, I was thrilled then.
Yes.
And I think, from what I understand, the Good Hotel Guide had read some of her recommendations and they do respect her in the industry. And then obviously readers also send in their recommendations and say you should look at this hotel, so it's not just assessors, it's also the general public that
public
can
run
in
customers.
And say I really like Brocco and we should have it in the guide, so that was good as well.
Wonderful news. And what is it then about the hotel, about Brocco on the Park, that has been particularly impressing not only the assessors, not only critics and commentators and writers like Fiona, but also your customers? What do people love about your establishment?
Well, the Good Hotel Guide said when they did their speech on Monday when we went to the awards, they said the people that have won this are for people that have character and great hospitality and a warm welcome and something that's a little bit different to what we're used to. So I hope that's what we try to do here. I think a lot of my customers will say you've got great attention to detail, which is a real nice thing to hear, because I did spend sort of 16 months completely devoted to renovating the building.
Yes.
And to thinking of the detail. And it was the detail that inspired me and spurred me on and made me feel that I was going to create something. It was going to be like this. I mean, I didn't know that people were going to feel like they do about it. But for me, I really care about detail. So I want to make sure that everything was perfect. I spent a lot of time just looking at where the plug socket should be so that someone can dry their hair properly and can see a mirror. Just little things like that that do all add up if you spend a lot of time on everything to making some experience the best experience it can be.
And so that care, that attention to detail, that attention to providing a wonderful experience then clearly resonates not only with customers but also with assessors as well. And many Sheffielders will have passed the building during the refurbishment and the redevelopment. You've been open for, as you say, since 2014, 2 years. We'll talk a little bit more about the refurbishment in a moment and what you were doing before. But in that short time, you've clearly built a loyal customer base. Now, once people have been here and witnessed and experienced that attention to detail, the care, the attention to customer service, I imagine they'll come back and they'll recommend it to people, and you'll create a thriving customer base. But how did you attract business in the first place? Creating a brand new establishment. How did you get on the map? How did you get your customers?
We'll come on to it later, as you say, but my background is marketing. So I did spend a lot of time thinking about the sort of people that I hoped it was going to attract. So I sort of put them into a little bit of categories in terms of what would they want at the area that it's located in and what is going to attract someone to come here. I've always wanted it to be a community feel, and I called it a neighbourhood kitchen for the restaurant.
Yes.
And I love the fact that people do come back and back and back again. And I'm really happy that I have the same people that come every week, sit on the same table and have one pot of coffee. I don't mind that, and want to chat to me. I love it. And then they'll see their friends across the room. And that's about the warmth. And, it's not about the money or the spend, which of course is, you do need to keep it going. But it is about community, and it is about people feeling that they are welcome and they are happy to be there. And so that's the bit that I've tried to work on to get people to come back.
Yes.
In terms of marketing it, I still think there's a lot of people that don't know us, don't know that they can just pop in and have a meal.
Because that's an important factor, isn't it? We've been talking about you appearing in the Good Hotel Guide, and, of course, other guides as well, and winning the Caesar Award from the Good Hotel Guide, which is fantastic. But as you say, you're offering a neighbourhood kitchen, you're offering food, you're a restaurant, people can pop in for coffees. And the day that we're carrying out this interview on a Thursday afternoon, I've popped in to see you, and there are people clearly enjoying a snack, a drink, a meal, or whatever. So there's been an achievement in terms of getting people to know about this, but equally speaking, you're continuing to reach out to people so that more people find out about you.
Yeah, I mean, the marketing I did to begin with was actually do an open day for all our neighbours and people that supported us through the build, and the neighbours were being fantastic, really say thank you to them. And then I literally wore a lot of shoe leather out by going up and down the stairs and showing people the rooms. And that just spread the word really quickly because people loved it. And I mean, even had two people crying in the top room when they're looking out the window. They just couldn't believe we were in Sheffield. And I think people then were intrigued. I think it was the fact that the build took so long was fabulous, because Brocco Banks always snarled it with traffic. So everyone was watching to say, what is going to happen there?
Yes.
So that was good in terms of marketing. And I sort of put up some banners and things as well. But people were intrigued, and they did come in their droves to have a look and test us out. And, hopefully when they did enjoy it, they came back. So we are starting to build a reputation, but it is difficult, and you've still got to keep going and get more people to know about it.
And so you have to, as you've alluded to, segment your marketing to different customers, depending on whether you're pushing the neighbourhood kitchen to people in the city, whether you're pushing the hotel itself, and helping more people to become aware of what you offer. But at the same time, you've attracted quite a lot of publicity around the restaurant, the neighbourhood kitchen offering as well. So we talked about the build taking a long time. Was that challenging? Did it take longer than expected?
I think it did take longer than expected in terms of sort of permissions and things like that, which were tricky. But actually, if you think about it, it was only 16 months and I was pretty much doing it solo.
Yes.
I'd got Rock Developments and a guy called Ryan, who was the builder, owner of that company. He's only a young guy. We did it together, and he wasn't responsible for getting the electricians in or the mechanics. I put packages out for every single thing. So I bought the windows, I bought the doors, I bought the plasterboard, I bought the timber, I bought the block and beam. So I bought every single thing that this building was personally.
Yes.
And then he got it in and built and managed. But we put out tenders for all these different packages. I had a part-time QS, so he's got a full-time job and we're just doing it in the evenings. So really, between the fact that there was only a very, two or three people involved in actually doing something from complete scratch, so all the walls had gone, all the ceilings had gone, all the floors had gone, we did it all, from scratch. It was not a bad timescale, really.
No, it's a remarkable undertaking, that, and with... So you had a QS, a quantity surveyor, on a part-time basis. But you had a builder you could trust, clearly, and work with.
He was a joiner, so he could do the joinery package, but he couldn't do anything else. So, other than coordinate subcontractors coming in and out. Mm. It was also quite challenging with all the... one of the biggest challenges, I think, was the... And I think I've put it to my mind, it's only just come back to me now... the trauma was the water, the gas and the electric,
right?
Because you had to upgrade all of those services.
Yes.
So they had to go from a one phase to a three phase. I'm very technical now.
Things you didn't know you'd need to
learn. I've learned a lot. So that took a heck of a long time. There was lots of bureaucracy, lots of things you had to go through. I think the week before we were even trying to get water in, it was that sort of tight.
Yeah.
So it was very hard work was the actual services. But bear in mind, I was just doing a build project. I was also then doing a fit out project, so I had had to buy everything from the coffee maker to the teaspoon to the bedding to the bed to the shutters. So there was so many different trades, and so running that whole project was massive alongside the build project. And then really on the end of it, I had an operational project. I had to recruit, source, train, deliver a team of people in 2 weeks and open up the doors. And so I don't think I slept about 3 hours a night.
I
lived on site because I was absolutely, it was unbelievably hard, but very exhilarating.
It must have been exhilarating. So build project, fit out project, operations and launch. And of course, marketing as well.
And the market with all the brand, the website had to go live. The brand, the print, the menus, it was a massive job. But I actually found it very life enhancing, and I've never been happier than when I was doing that build project, I think. Mm. I absolutely loved it.
Wonderful. And so we've alluded to your previous experience. You're running a marketing agency, mm-hmm. and that must have stood you in good stead then for this project.
I felt that stood me in the best stead because I always have started everything from the premise of the brand. So if you start with the brand and the vision and the values of what you want to achieve, then everything that you purchase and everything that you do sits under that value and that brand. So you don't go off buying some bright, vivid orange chair that wouldn't fit into your colour scheme. No. Because you might like it that day when you've gone out shopping, which obviously I was attracted to lots of different things. But if it didn't fit into my brand and my brand board and my mood board and my paint board, then that orange, bright orange chair was not making the cut. And that just went to everything, really. So it was the menu, it was the team, it was the uniforms, it was, you know, everything started from the brand. And where is it positioned? Who am I trying to attract? What is it doing? What are the values? And it's all about eat well, live well, sleep well. So if I was buying a mattress, I bought the best mattress that I could afford, because I felt that the basics of the hotel needed to be top quality, and that if you get that right, then, you know, everything else comes from that, yeah. I believe. And so marketing for me is the driver. I mean, other people might go down, you know, I'm sure my accountant would say it needs to be the money. Go for everything that's the cheapest. But my background's marketing, so it's always going to come from the brand vision. And that's where my starting point was for the whole project.
And that vision is clearly about providing an experience to people that they enjoy and they value. And so the brand has to be supportive of that.
Yeah.
And then if you got that right, then you keep your accountant happy anyway, because the customers...
Hopefully, eventually.
Super. Well, sadly, we haven't got much time left in this interview. We're going to have to get you back on again in the future. But before we do go, Tina, I've just got one, I suppose, final question for you, if I may. And many of our listeners running their own businesses of whatever size and within whatever industries, I think, can learn about you've demonstrated meticulous attention to detail, a clear passion for the importance of brand and brand values and so on.
Yeah.
What do you know now, though, having set up and run Brocco on the Park for a couple of years, that you wish you'd known at the start? Or alternatively, another way of asking the same question, what top tips would you give other business owners that perhaps you wish people had given you?
That's quite a hard question, because I want to say that looking after your staff means that you look after your customers. That means you are successful. And I really try to do that. You know, I do really care about my staff, and I really do care about my customers, actually. And I think those are the two most important elements of the whole business.
Yes.
But I've been probably knocked a bit by staffing issues, and it's hard to keep my passion and my enthusiasm for being that person with people that, you know, you start to get a bit knocked in it. I think what I've learned is to be much more robust in everything to do with HR, and however nice you want to be, you have to have all the policies and all the procedures and all the HR ticked off. And actually, if you were going to invest in something, I'd probably invest in a very good HR professional to help a small business, because the legislation that I've learned, and it's an awful thing to say, but the things I've learned over the last couple of years, particularly in this sort of industry, is that you need to have that legislation watertight.
Well, that's really great advice.
It really, for me, is, you know, I mean, the government doesn't particularly help you, a small business, I don't believe. And that it's very hard, and especially all the minimum wage and all that sort of thing keep constantly going up, but customers not wanting you to put any of your prices up. It is quite tricky for particularly a hospitality business when it's very people-led. But HR is where I would say that you need to invest in making sure that everything that you do is watertight.
So if you know that everything's watertight, then you can carry on being a great employer, but safe in the confidence for you, confidence for all your staff, that everything is
yeah.
done correctly. Yeah.
I mean, I've always tried to do everything. I always do everything by the book. I've
yes.
always been like that. That's my philosophy. But it seems to still come back to bite you, even however good you feel that you're trying to be.
So get that right from the outset.
Yeah, definitely.
And good advice there that people need to remember, reflect on, and ensure that they're doing in the businesses
yeah.
that they run. So where next then for Brocco on the Park? Where will we see you in 6 months, a year's time? What's the ambition over the coming months?
Well, I've just sort of launched this Tuesday Social Club. And so we're doing lots more events and things that keep it fresh and different and exciting. So there's all sorts of things there, that from you know, a gin tasting night to a Bordeaux evening, to craft workshops, to jewellery making, to Scandi evenings and supper clubs. And I love doing something that's always a bit creative and fun and different, and use my old creative brain. And, well, you never know. Maybe there might be Brocco in the Hills coming up.
Well, watch this space. Exciting stuff. Brilliant. Well, thanks ever so much for joining me and talking through Brocco on the Park with me and with our listeners today, Tina. And congratulations on the accolade, City Hotel of the Year, from the Good Hotel Guide. Absolutely marvellous. And, well, we wish you every success in the future.
Thank you.
Of course, people can find out more about you at your website as well.
Yes, and I think we're in the Sunday Times on Sunday, so if you want to buy that copy, we're there.
Tremendous. Excellent. Tina Carr, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. And you've just heard from Tina Carr of Brocco on the Park, the boutique Sheffield hotel and restaurant, which was just named City Hotel of the Year by the Good Hotel Guide. We've also heard today from Dave Colclough of Dialogue, working to provide SMS text message connectivity and technology, and recently named in the Business Insider Growth Awards this week. Now, earlier on in the programme today, we talked about Social Enterprise Exchange and a launch conference taking place next week on Thursday, October the 20th. Social Enterprise Exchange is a new initiative providing support to social enterprises. Well, how will that work? In the studio today, we're joined now by Steve Buckley of Social Enterprise Exchange. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Darren.
Thanks for coming in today. So what is Social Enterprise Exchange?
Well, Social Enterprise Exchange is a community-based consortium that's come together to support social enterprise across the Sheffield City region. So it's a coalition of seven social enterprises and voluntary sector organisations in the Sheffield City region, and they're going to be working together to provide a programme support for people that want to start up social enterprises, and also for existing social enterprises that want to transform their business by developing new products and services or seeking new investment and so on.
And so by support, what kind of support is envisioned to be on offer to these social enterprises in startup or in growth phases?
So the organisations involved in delivering social enterprise or social enterprise exchange are all specialist support organisations that work in enterprise support and employment development and other related fields. And they'll be bringing their know-how to provide business advice to social enterprise startups and to new social enterprises, and there'll also be a small grant scheme, and there'll be conferences and events that that a wider audience can take part in. People that may be thinking of starting a social enterprise but not quite sure yet, that want to kind of get a taster or understand a bit more about what it is about. We have a launch conference next Thursday, which is open to the public. It's going to be an opportunity for people to hear more about Social Enterprise Exchange, but also to hear some case studies of social enterprises that have worked and that are successes from the region, and an opportunity to meet with some of the other players and decision makers and people that support social enterprise in the Sheffield City region.
So that launch conference, free to come along to, and that's next Thursday. It's 9:30 a.m. through to 2, including lunch break and so on. And people can find out more about that, of course, at the Eventbrite site, and we'll flag that up shortly. But you talked about pulling together a consortium here of people to deliver this, and this being a city region-wide initiative, of course, and there being a grant programme as well. And we know from the research that has been done by Social Enterprise UK that access to finance continues to be a big issue for social enterprises, with the majority of social enterprises saying that actually that is the number one issue. It's not that they expect to be grant dependent, it's that they need the kind of access to finance that ordinary small businesses have, in terms of startup, in terms of working capital, and often they find that that traditional banks don't understand them. So it's good to hear that there's a grant program here, and that is part of the mix alongside the other expertise, the And it sounds to me as though there's a mixture of sort of inspiration in terms of seeing that other people have been able to make things work, make social enterprises work, but also practical support as well. Is that a, perhaps a good summary?
Yes, I mean, the grant package is part of the offer, but it's only part of it. I think that, you know, it's not just about finance, and finance obviously is needed for startup, but there's actually quite a lot of financial opportunities out there for social enterprises. So what the programme will help to do is to help signpost people to where the finance is available, to help get them investment ready, and developing business plans and propositions, the kind of materials that they need to promote their offer. Many social enterprises are now starting with crowdfunding initiatives, using some of the crowdfunding tools that are available online, and Social Enterprise Exchange will help them to design their approach to that so that they can be successful in crowdfunding if that's the way they go about it. So there will be some small grants available. Those will help to kickstart some of the startup enterprises, and they'll help to contribute to transforming existing social enterprises. But the main thing we're bringing to the mix here is some in-depth know-how from organisations that have been involved in the field for a long time, specialist social enterprise advisors who will be able to provide a high level of support in all of the different aspects of setting up a social enterprise, whether it's marketing, product development, developing the right legal structures and governance arrangements, financial planning and fundraising and so on. And we'll not only be simply providing advice on a one-to-one basis, but there'll be a lot of opportunities for people to work together, to bring together social entrepreneurs, to share their ideas in workshops. So particularly with the startup social enterprises, we'll be inviting them to take part in intensive, what we've called hothouse workshops, where they can explore their business idea and work it up alongside other social entrepreneurs and with the support of specialist social enterprise advisors.
So pretty heady mix there, a great cocktail of support for social enterprises. Pretty essential if you're in the city region, you're listening to this, and you're either running a social enterprise already or you want to start one up. You can come along, you can find out more at the launch conference. And as Steve has mentioned, there will be a great variety of support for you. Now, if you want to come, you can book. You have to book. You have to register. It's free to do so. And the registration is on Eventbrite. But it's also worth flagging that you've set up social media profiles and so on, where Social Enterprise Exchange will continue to disseminate support, advice and details of the programme as it supports people. And we'll give those addresses out in just one moment, Steve, when we conclude. Final question, it's a city region-wide programme. You've pulled together a coalition of partners to make this happen. Length of the programme and how it's funded. How have you got this all together?
Yeah, so it's a three-year programme. It'll run till the middle of 2019, and it's funded primarily by the European Union under the European Regional Development Fund. So it may well be one of the last tranches of European money that we get in Sheffield City Region. I mean, of course, we don't really know yet what the outcomes of Brexit are going to be, but it is financed by the European Union and co-financed by the partners. It's a project which I hope will. Would not be displacing what's already going on. I mean, in the past, there's been a lot of different enterprise programs in this region, and it's sometimes a bit confusing finding your way around them. This will be a kind of a single point of contact at Sheffield City Region level. We'll be working with the Regional Growth Hub, which is part of the Sheffield City Region Local Enterprise Partnership, and we'll effectively be the social enterprise spoke of the Growth Hub. But we'll also be looking to reinforce existing social enterprise support initiatives like the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network, which is a great bunch of people who have been meeting regularly over the last couple of years and are providing networking opportunities for social enterprises in Sheffield. So the idea is this will contribute to sustaining existing social enterprise support initiatives and help to build some new ones.
That sounds fantastic. Well, people can find out more, come along on Thursday, or follow Social Enterprise Exchange on Twitter, and the address is SocEntExchange with an X. So SocEntExchange on Twitter. You can find you on Facebook as well, of course, Steve. You're there as well. SocEntExchange, and registration details are on Eventbrite. if you look up Social Enterprise Exchange Launch Conference Sheffield, 20th of October. It's on Eventbrite. I will tweet out a link to this at the end of this programme as well, so people can find that. Steve Buckley, Social Enterprise Exchange, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, and find us on socentexchange.net, where you can actually register your interest in the programme.
Superb. Good. Thank you, Steve. You've been listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. We've heard today from Steve Buckley talking about Social Enterprise Exchange. Get along to their launch conference on Thursday. You've also heard from Dave Colclough of Dialog and from Tina Carr of Brocco on the Park. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed that, don't panic. You can catch up with the podcast on the Sheffield Live website later on today. Just go to sheffieldlive.org, find radio shows, look up Business Live, and you'll find the programme from today, the 14th of October. It will be uploaded to the podcast section shortly after the show concludes. Now, we'll be back on air next Friday from 9 through to 10, so tune in then, but don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk. That's on from 10 all the way through to noon. So, of course, stay tuned for that. And we're going to play out with just a little bit of Bob Dylan, named Nobel Laureate for Literature this week. We'll play a bit of Mr. Tambourine Man.